This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio and the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. The Dow today is up 143 points. Remember that dive in December? It's gone away for the most part. We'll talk to Elise Glink about what's going on in the stock market and what we might expect for 2019. A little bit later in the program, Frank Sennett will be here to kick around Sears because everyone else has. And then we'll wrap things up with Julie Benezet. She's an author, and she has this... Well, it's a business training program, really. It's called The Journey of Not Knowing. And so we'll talk to Julie a little bit about embracing the unknown when it comes not only to business, but with the idea of all of us U.S. citizens who are currently without pay, government workers, 800,000 or so. So through the filter of the government shutdown, we'll talk about embracing the unknown. The government shutdown is certainly a reason why a lot of people would be turning to best money moves these days, and Elise Glink is behind that. She joins us on a phone line now. Elise, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
It's nice to be here, Steve.
Right, so Best Money Moves is a company you created, software you created to help workers and employers really help their workers deal with financial instability or financial worries, and that's the sort of thing that a lot of us are facing these days.
Well, people are very concerned about their money. There were some new numbers out this morning from Bankrate that shows that two-thirds of employees and Americans don't have $1,000 in an emergency fund. However, the median cost of the typical emergency people face is like $3,700. So even if you had the $1,000, you're still going to be in the hole. And so I think that knowing that instinctively is giving all of us the shakes when it comes to our money, and financial stress is very high.
Okay, those statistics are all over the place. So what? Tell me again. You said two-thirds don't have $1,000?
Right. Bankrate reported that about a little over 60% of Americans don't have $1,000 in an emergency savings. And that number is a little bit higher than what the Fed found last year in its annual financial wellness survey. They found that 40% of Americans don't have $400.
It's a different amount. That's why I was asking you, because I was reading a piece you wrote just this week about that, and you mentioned the 40%, 400, and both of them can be true because we're talking about a higher amount of money. But so when it comes to government workers, you know, and I'm reading these stories, and I am very sympathetic. I don't mean to sound unsympathetic, but I'm assuming if you have a government job, you know, we used to joke those are the good jobs. I'm surprised that so many of the stories we're hearing about people who are literally, you know, on the fringe here, living from paycheck to paycheck. How is it because the government isn't paying well? Are we as Americans overextending? I know you're going to bring up college debt, but I mean, what is it that leads to this situation?
Well, there's a whole number of things, but the Pew Research Center produced late in the year last year a really interesting graphic, and it shows that American paychecks are bigger than they were 40 years ago, but purchasing power has hardly budged. So if you take a look at average hourly wages in the U.S., seasonally adjusted, in constant $2018 dollars, all the way going back to 1964, year I was born. And back then, $2.50 an hour might have been what the wage was, but it feels like $20 today, right? But the purchasing power has actually stayed the same. And when you think about your purchasing power staying the same over 50 years, and yet lots of things cost a lot more on a relative basis, you can start to understand how the demands on an American paycheck have made people unable to come to the table in ways that they were able to do 20, 30 years ago. So, to your point, student loan debt has skyrocketed. The cost of health insurance in this country has skyrocketed. Even for people who have employer-paid health insurance, a lot of these are now high-deductible health care plans, and the individual is shouldering a significant amount of cost. And so we've pushed a lot of that in the employer, you know, point of view. They've shifted a lot of those costs to the employee, and then they've got student loan debt and credit card debt. It's really hard to stay afloat.
I would like to go in my fast-forward machine 50 years from now or so and see how this turns out, because it seems to me in my adulthood we have put so much more on individuals, created so much more individual responsibility, particularly when it comes to retirement, you know, when it comes to pensions or things like that, where we used to have someone sort of taking care of that for us or overseeing it for us. those people aren't there now, and that could be a real big problem coming up in 10, 20 years.
It is. And if you think about it, one of the reasons people take government jobs is the pensions that they still get. Now, government workers still have a pretty decent-sized pension, and some state organizations have a great pension. This state, unfortunately, our state, is having a little trouble on the pension front.
They've got a great pension if you're receiving it in Illinois.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you're not so great, if you're the one paying
for it.
But as you look at government workers, the deal was always you take a little bit less in salary as the years go on, and we're going to give you a pension that you can live off of when you retire. But even for government workers, those pensions are going away simply because they're unaffordable. When you plan for something, and this is what happens with Social Security, right? When they started Social Security 77 years ago or whatever it was, you know, people lived about 3 to 9 months longer than, you know, after their 65th birthday. That was it. And today we're all living into our mid-80s and into 90s. It really takes a toll.
Okay, so that makes a little sense. I was going to jump on you and say, well, why if they were affordable 30 years ago, are they unaffordable now? And you're saying because we're living longer is a big part of it?
We're living longer, and there are fewer people, fewer millennials, fewer Gen Zs, who are going to be moving into the workforce to help support a larger aging population.
A lot of those millennials are retiring at 30 years old. I want to talk to you about that after the break. You know, I ended the last segment at least by saying I want to retire today. I learned over the holidays, I'm not ready to retire. I learned what my wife has been telling me for a long time. Just sitting around, and man, it was just driving me crazy, so I don't think I can retire for a while.
Well, the goal to retire these days isn't just to sit around and play a lot of golf. For many people, the goal of retirement is to really find the next profession or the next thing that you want to do that keeps you productive and engaged, and that's how we all go about living to 85 and 90 these days.
The phrase is, you retire to something.
Yes, you retire to your next adventure.
And that's what keeps us alive, right? That working, staying active like that helps extend our lives. So I guess my wife is clear. I won't be at home anytime soon. Susie Orman.
She is.
Susie Orman was in an interview recently, and she was talking about how much money you need to retire. And this idea, the FIRE movement came up, the financial independence retire early. And I've been reading about this group or this sort of discussion where people are amassing wealth early. This is like the Steve Martin joke, how to be a millionaire and never pay taxes. First, get $1 million, right?
Right.
And so if you want to retire at 30, first, you've got to get a lot of money. Is there a great number of these people who really are sort of chucking it at 30 and just retiring for the rest of their lives?
Okay, so first of all, we haven't seen the rest of their lives yet, so I'm wondering about that. I'm
That's
also
true.
Wondering.
We've seen like three years of their lives, right?
Exactly. I mean, now they retire at 33 or 35 or even 41, and then now they're 42 and they're telling the rest of us how they did it. And how they did it seems to be very clear to me, is they start out with very high-paying jobs and no student loan debt. And when I mean high-paying, I mean they're computer science engineers, right? They're computer tech. They're making $150,000, $200,000 a year. Okay. Great. Or they're lawyers, and they're making $280,000 a year working for a top-rated firm. Great. And then they live, and I like this part of it, they live cheap. So they don't live in a house that would be commensurate with that kind of a salary. They live as cheaply as they possibly can. They do with as little as possible. And they put as much away in their 401k, company 401k, and if they qualify for a Roth IRA there too, and then everything else just goes into a brokerage account. And then they do something that I think has worked really well the last 5 years or so, or even 10 years. They invested a lot of it in the stock market. It quadrupled in size. And now they are the smartest people on the block telling you how to retire young.
And so the idea is that everything's sort of gone for them for a while. And you're right, we don't know how it's going to work for them in 5, 10 years from now. But reading that article, then I came across, you know, a couple of the statistics, the rule of 4% or things like that. How do the rest of us know if we've got the chunk of change that we need that will allow us to retire?
You know, I think the first thing is to evaluate not only what you're spending today in your last few years of working life, but also what do you expect your retirement expenses will look like? Are you going to stay in the house you're in? Is your house paid off? Do you just have the taxes? Are you moving somewhere that's lower cost? Are you going to trade down, move to a different state? you have to look at those kinds of expenses and then what you think you're going to be doing in your so-called retirement. Are you going to be volunteering? Are you going to be taking another job that maybe pays a lot less, but it still provides income and something for you to do instead of spend money all day? Figuring out what that looks like for you is the key to then looking at what kinds of retirement income streams you've already planned for. So do you have one of those lucky pensions? Are you going to get a 401k rollover? What are you going to do from the time you're 35 until you're 59 and a half and you can touch your IRA? So those are the next things that you have to look through and think about and just figure out how you're going to get from here to there and then see if those two numbers match up or if I think the case is for most of us, you've got a few more years to go.
All right, I'm going to do the numbers, I'm going to get the result, and then I'm going to go buy a Powerball ticket, Elise.
Well, that's a wonderful way to plan for retirement. Good luck with that.
Elise Glink, read more at BestMoneyMoves and ThinkLink.com. Nice talking to you today. Thanks very much.
You bet, Steve.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here in the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. We come to you from the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago River. And Frank Senna joins us now. Frank from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, while Eric was doing the news, I just got an email from Cranes to nominate now Cranes 20 in their 20s. So there's yet another Cranes list that I will never be on.
You and me both, buddy.
Yeah. What is the 20 in their 20s? Those are the young up-and-comers, the whippersnappers, that sort of thing?
Yeah, kind of the rising stars on the Chicago scene, people who are making a big difference in the city at a young age.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about Sears. There's a TikTok. I haven't looked at Cranes. I know you guys had a couple of stories earlier. I don't know about later in the morning, but kind of a TikTok from CNBC that Eddie Lampert and the board, they were meeting Fifth Avenue. They're trying to come to terms. I think there was some conversation about protecting Lampert from lawsuits from earlier ordeals, things like that. But they just kind of couldn't come to a deal. And then yesterday, about this time, they called the bankruptcy judge and said, "We're stuck. Sears is going to be liquidated." And the judge said, "Go try again." And they ended up coming to terms, which, you know, I think that's, if it all works out, that's just a great story that a federal judge got involved and potentially saved tens of thousands of jobs.
Yeah, and this is an interesting, look at the proceedings of bankruptcy court, federal bankruptcy court, when they're faced with potential rescue plan versus liquidation that can cost thousands of jobs. They do try to push for any kind of rational plan that would keep people employed and keep the business going. So that's what we saw here. And it looks like that's been accepted. Lampert sweetened the deal to around $5 billion. And we've got, some signs of life with about 400 locations that Sears and some Kmarts would still be around.
So that's the little picture. The big picture really hasn't changed much in that, we've been watching Sears sort of wither for years, and I don't know that how much time is being purchased here. I mean, what does Sears need to do in order to survive through this? And I won't even use the word thrive, just to survive this day going forward.
Yeah, there's a great Bloomberg opinion piece that we actually have leading ChicagoBusiness.com page now that talks about a few things that Sears could do to at least stave the wolf off from the door for a while. One is, more of a nostalgia play. Do some marketing around everybody but Generation Z has some kind of nostalgic tie to Sears, whether it was circling toys in the Wish Book or buying your first Craftsman tool set, et cetera. So playing to that, really emphasizing appliance sales, which are one of the few bright spots for Sears. Sears is number three after Home Depot and Lowe's and just ahead of Best Buy in major appliance sales. So putting some of that sales force behind expert consultation, that's worked out for Best Buy. And then, another recommendation is maybe it's time to jettison the Kmart brand entirely and just focus on, maintaining and hopefully building Sears back to some sustainability.
Well, we'll watch that. And don't hold me to this, but I remember a statistic from a week or two ago that said something to the effect that Sears was still the number one home fitness equipment seller in the U.S. when it comes to retail. Does that sound familiar to you?
I hadn't heard that, yeah. But that's where I get all my shake weights.
Or people buy treadmills, I guess. I don't know. I was surprised by the number. But they still are.
I got 6 or 10 of them. I misplace them. I go to Sears, buy another one.
And they're like reading glasses for you, right? They're just in every room on every table.
That's what I do, Steve. Yeah.
Like Shake Weight Twister. Have you ever done that? It's fun.
Right now, in fact.
While you're eating your RX bars.
That's right.
I want to talk. So we talk about RX all the time, and it's a great story. You know, the five ingredients sort of product. They've done very well. They sold for, I think, hundreds of millions of dollars, right? $600 million to Kellogg's. And now they've got a recall because they had a vendor that provided an ingredient, which might have had some peanuts in it. Some people have been sick. They seem to have handled it well, right? They fired the vendor right away. They're doing a recall. I guess they're doing the best they can with this story.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it shines a spotlight on, like we talked about with bankruptcy court last story, this story shines a spotlight on supply chain management, really knowing who your suppliers and vendors are. You hear a lot of talk about how blockchain technology may help track agricultural ingredients from start to finish to kind of avoid these kind of things. So technology may save us ultimately. But, yeah, I mean, by and large, they got a vendor that provided some ingredients that may have some trace peanuts. And that, of course, would be very problematic for people with peanut allergies. So they did the recall very quickly, said, hey, look, if you don't have a peanut allergy, you can eat these. If you decide to throw them away anyway, we'll give you a refund. And we fired the vendor. So, yeah, I mean, all things being equal, I think they handled it pretty well.
All right, just to zip this up. Now, Frank is using his Shake Weights at home. He's at his RX bar for lunch. And that's all because he wants to get in shape for the squash championship, the World Squash Championship, which is coming to Chicago. The CEO of Guggenheim, Mark Walters, put up $1 million in prize money. I know they've toyed with this before. They were at the Chicago Athletic Club, I think. They did something on Pioneer Court a few years ago. We just got about 30 seconds or so. But why would I be interested in the squash championship in Chicago?
Yeah, so beginning February 23rd, Professional Squash Association holding its World Championship Tournament here for the first time. It's going to be at Union Station's Great Hall. So, you know, if you enjoyed watching that baby buggy go down the steps in The Untouchables,
right,
perhaps you'll enjoy seeing people hit a little ball around as well.
They play in like a giant acrylic box, which is kind of cool to see. So, hopefully it will catch on a little bit here.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that they kind of combine it with MMA, and it's like two squash players enter, well, one squash player leaves.
The nice thing is, too, it's $1 million in prize money, and it's split evenly. The women make as much as men as they do in the championship. Art, I look forward to seeing you in the box, Frank. I wish you the best of luck.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. I'm going to go shake some Shake Weight.
I can hear it in your voice. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. All right, stop. I'm taking a second to appreciate all the companies and small businesses taking the time and spending the money to help those furloughed government employees, like the Adler Planetarium, the Auditorium Theater, and the brew pub Horse Thief Hollow in the Beverly neighborhood. They're providing a free lunch valued at $15 to any government worker with a valid government ID Monday through Friday between 2 and 4 p.m. That's just one of the examples of the good deeds going around these days, especially given the situation of the government. And speaking of the man, it may feel like that's who's watching you in the freezer aisle of a handful of Chicago Walgreens thanks to Cooler Screens. The Chicago startup is putting digital screens on cooler doors to show you ads and suggest products you might like as you walk by. The part that might unsettle some people is that it uses cameras and software to determine your age and gender. Wait. That's not that bad. That information is pretty readily available. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, from Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Julie Benezet is on the phone line. She is the person behind Leadership, The Journey of Not Knowing, a leadership consultant, author of the book, and also a program of business leadership. Julie, welcome to the Biz Lunch. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks very much. I didn't know there was such a thing as a cherry-spitting Guinness record.
Those were the days back in the 80s and 90s. I was here. It was a lot of fun in southwest Michigan.
Wow.
So I'm interested in this idea of taking the unknown and embracing it. You know, Tell me about it through the face of those government workers right now who don't know what's next. I mean, how do you, I guess it's maybe wrong to say how do you make it a positive, but how do you at least deal with it? Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there is very much a positive aspect to it, hard as it is to believe, is I think I'm felt a lot of pain for them. But it's part of a larger world. It went, we have a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainty, and that was the gift and the curse of the Internet that has drowned us in information, ideas, and competitive forces that we all have to parse. And the reaction has been just that, reactivity. So that instead of people thinking, they react. And when you have something like this going on with the federal government, you're not, and you have lots of unknowns, uncertainty. We don't know when this is going to end because it's gone longer than anything. We don't know how it's going to end because the usual political trade-offs aren't happening. And we don't know who is going to make it end. There's no white knight. So that immense uncertainty. But if you take it in the larger perspective, is that's the world we live in, and say, okay, how can I find something in this to make things better? For me, my family, community, something.
And what is finding something better? A different career or a different life balance, or what is it that we're going to find that's better?
You could find it could be anything. In this case, for example, you can decide something so simple as, okay, maybe it's time to elevate my career. Maybe it's time to go to night school and get an MBA. I've been putting this off forever. But what it will do, it will benefit my career, whether I stay in the government or leave. And it will benefit my family because I will position myself better. You could try that. You can decide that you can do something so simple as, okay, I'm going to attack that front yard that last year I made into a vegetable garden and caused a holy war in the neighborhood
right.
because they're very manicured. Or it could be something better when you say, you know, I'm tired of these bums in office. I'm not going to vote them out. I'm going to run for office. It can serve whatever it is that is important to you that gives you purpose that could go make something better.
So rather than being beaten up by it, embrace it, deal with it, and find the positive there. Julie Benezet, thanks very much for joining us today. The name of the book is The Journey of Not Knowing. I appreciate it.
Thank you.